Hello everyone, this is Emmanuel for the Classical Drunks, the podcast that attempts to make rationality great again. Today is a bit of a special episode. Aaron, myself and Pierre went to see Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris and Douglas Murray give a conference here in Dublin, which we found very interesting. They were talking about ideas such as the role of religion and morality in our day-to-day lives and the nature of truth. And we just sat down to kind of talk about what we thought of this conference.
So, guess where we were this weekend?
In the pub.
We were in the pub, but like we're there every weekend.
Yes.
But we went to the Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, and Douglas Murray, I guess you call it talk or lecture?
Talk.
Yes, I didn't want to call it a debate. It was a discussion.
A discussion in the Three Arena in Dublin. So this is the third part, kind of their tour. They had two more talks before this, didn't they?
They had Vancouver. That's where it started. I don't know if they had three or more. They had a few already. First Ireland, and then it will be the UK.
They're continuing this talk in the
UK. Yeah. So it's not over.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been quite enjoyable.
Yeah. So it was hosted by Pangburn Philosophy.
Yes.
I guess we'll just talk about like going there and like a few things we noticed on the way in and things like that. That I think will be interesting to mention. Firstly, Manny actually the night before got to actually meet Dr. Peterson.
Oh, it's the best.
Randomly on the street, you bumped into him.
I know.
His family.
People are not going to believe this, but it's literally what happened. I was just walking out of the pub, half drunk and complaining to myself that I would have a short night of sleep, and crossing the streets, it's just Dr. Peterson. Hello.
Well, you were cognizant enough to actually go get a photo with him, so like. No denying that it actually happened.
Yes, so it has happened, mm-hmm. And it was just the most random happenstance that I've had.
Just a small tangent. Dublin is freakishly small.
Yes, I think that's what it kind of speaks to.
Yeah,
Dublin is small. If someone famous is visiting Dublin, there is a chance, and I'm the living proof of that you will just stumble upon them.
Yeah. I always say that if you have a problem with maybe Dublin bus or the transport system, it's fine. Just shout across the road. The transport minister is probably there.
Another aspect of that is in Dublin, you can't really have a relationship that turns sour.
Oh, God, no.
You're just going to see that person again and again everywhere. Yeah. So, take care of your friends.
Yeah, yeah. It is one of those interesting things about small communities.
Yes.
Or small feeling communities, we could say. But,
I'm sure the other three quarters of the country not living in Dublin are going to feel very offended that we called Dublin a small community.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
But, also, you've been just bumping into celebs everywhere, haven't you? You got to meet Armin Navabi too when we went into the arena, and you got to ask him a question. Armin Navabi, if anyone doesn't know, he's a co-host in the Secular Jihadist podcast. Go check it out; they're great. And he also works for Pangburn Philosophy, the hosts of the event. And I just want to do a quick PSA to all the neckbeards listening. Who displayed massive social ineptness during the entire proceeding of the event. One, go to the toilet before you sit down. Jesus Christ.
Yes, and especially if it's like, how long was it? 2 hours?
Two and a bit hours? Two and a half hours?
Just like empty all your bodily fluids before.
Yeah, and like get your drink. Don't go find your seat and then go get your drink. Just get your drink and find your seat.
So, toilets, drink, seat.
Yeah.
Just the one drink.
Just one drink.
Because otherwise you'll have to go.
Yeah, because there's like, between you and the aisle, there is, 20 people. So a PSA for the socially inept neckbeards out there.
Which I know there are many of who follow Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
Well, it was mostly, the crowd was a diverse age range, I would say. Mostly young. But a fairly diverse. I didn't expect to see many people in you know,
there was quite a bit of like adult couples, like even like clearly grandparents.
Yeah. And but it was, I think, probably 90% male, I would say.
I do think so.
90% yes. male.
Not 90%, because I work in circles that are 90% male, and that's like, you know, it smells like a sausage fest, but it was a good 2/3.
Oh, it was a very hot night, in fairness, though, and there was a lot of people there. Like, an hour in, the whiff, oh my god, the whiff of sweat coming off that audience. But yeah.
Just for people who follow us and are not necessarily from Dublin specifically, we've had a heat wave of, you know, being constantly over 20 degrees. And I think that our infrastructure is just not made to handle those kind of temperatures.
No, nowhere has air conditioning in Dublin, basically, is what we're saying.
Air conditioning in Dublin means opening the door.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, and anything else that we thought was interesting before we start talking about the crux of the debate itself? I guess they got a standing ovation on the way out.
Yeah, the room was pretty full as well. There was a lot of people.
Yeah, which is kind of when we haven't checked what's the capacity of the three arena.
I think it's about 8,000.
Like, it's pretty big, and it was maybe a couple of rows were empty, but that was it.
Like 100, 200 seats that weren't filled by
it was for all intents and purposes, it was full by a mass.
And also, so one of the things they did before the discussion was to ask a certain number of people in the crowd, like, okay, hi, who are you? Who are you here for? John Peterson, Sam Harris, or Douglas Murray? And like, do you have a question for them? And clearly, most people were here for Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, I'd say it was like
undeniably
70% Jordan, 20%, like not even 30% Sam, and I don't even think I heard one person say they were there for Douglas.
Well, they would say I'm here for the three of them.
Yeah, there was.
I think
it's like the nice neutral kind of.
Quite a few people said, "Oh, I'm here for like the debate of Sam and Jordan."
Yeah,
but I mean, in fairness, that's the format of like the tour is Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris discussing, Brett Weinstein in. In the US, Canada, was kind of like the third person to not really doing a moderation job, but kind of being like the third voice in the game. Mm. So I wouldn't feel bad for Douglas Murray, because that's the description of the job. It's like you're here to be the third person in the debate between Peterson and Harris.
Yeah. And he did kind of have a nice way of kind of summarizing people's points.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, well, and he has kind of a foot in both sides, because he is an atheist, and he also happens to be a very kind of like conservative type of person.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has a good grasp of the two points of views.
Mm. So I guess we'll get on to what they were talking about then.
Sure.
So it started off basically with Sam and Peterson basically steelmanning each other's arguments. I guess to summarize them really quickly, Peterson's argument is that Sam thinks too literally, too much in fact, deals too much with rational morality, and that he thinks that this isn't a useful way to disseminate morality to the masses, because it's too
incomplete.
Complicated.
It's incomplete.
It doesn't have as good a way of, like, you know, harnessing the, I guess you would say, soul or whatever, or you know, it's hard to empathize with just straight facts.
Yeah. Also, just to give some context, because you're talking about steelmanning, that was Harris giving his view on what Peterson thinks of him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then to flip that on the other side, Sam's view, Peterson's view, steelmanned by Harris, was that stories are powerful in disseminating values throughout a culture, but they don't need to be wrapped up in the baggage of religion to be moral. As you can have, again, just facts and rational morality. Or later on, he kind of went on about how we can have secular stories that show morality.
Yes.
So, yeah. I think that was kind of a decent story then of the two kind of arguments and how they kind of went at each other. But, yeah, they and I think there was a bit of overlap. I think, like, they both agree, you know? Like, it's not like we're coming at... There was nuance. They weren't coming at, like, one is totally right or one is totally wrong. I think Sam understands the power of... or the marketing power of stories, you know? I think he accepts that, you know?
I think that they do understand each other's points. They're just afraid of the other's point going too far. So, for example, one of the points that was brought is that Peterson would be afraid that trying to come up with morality through reason could lead to moral relativism, and just being like, oh, well, anything is good and anything is bad, and it just depends on how I feel about it. Mm. And on the other hand, religion and using religious stories as a way to go to morality, well, how to put that, hasn't always shown to be a good way of creating, you know, a moral system and a good system of law.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you can look at, like, today tends to be the most secular societies are the ones that respect human rights the most, as opposed to more religious societies tending to actually, you know, not following the rule of human rights law to the letter generally. So, you know, I think... Again, that might depend on... Not all religions are made equally, in fairness, though. So, you know.
To kind of jump in Peterson's defense, he's not arguing against humanism or secularism. Like, secularism is just kind of like a system in which you value, you know, kind of like rational inquiry and freedom of religion. So you can be a secular Christian. That's absolutely not a contradiction in term. So yeah. the point of discussion is not, like, they're not contending over secularism because they both are, you know, they are secularists in that sense. Like, Peterson is not saying state religion. Mm-hmm. As long as you say, I'm for rational inquiry and freedom of religion, that's the dictionary definition of secularism. The debate was not there. The debate was to say, like, can you have a secular morality of sort? Can you derive value, moral, you know, like kind of like moral value from straight up factual observations of the world? Mm-hmm. And that was more the level of discussion because if you read Harris's book on the moral landscape, the basic, if I'm oversimplifying it, the basic point of Sam Harris is that no matter how complex the world is, we can break it up in small facts. And maybe it's just like we are faced with a problem of complexity, a problem of a technical problem. Some questions are just hard to measure. But it doesn't mean that we cannot make factual claims about it and that we cannot get anywhere closer to the truth about it. The point of contention for Jordan Peterson is that there is an infinity of factual observations you can make, and which means it's impossible to derive simple moral facts from such complex systems in which we live in. That's not necessarily an easy idea to wrap your head around until I know myself from programming, working with systems that don't have a common sense built in them. Like, I think we few people understand how strong a common sense is. And this is kind of what I was trying to get to, which is that you can, you know, make an infinity of observations about the factual world, and, you know, kind of making sense out of it requires a level of abstractions which he's not sure you can have without a kind of a religious framework, and religious here being used in an extremely broad term, because, you know, I think that Jordan Peterson might be the only real agnostic on earth. He's not gonna say he believes in God. He won't say it, I think that we may have found the one and only true agnostic in the world.
I think that also his point is that a lifetime is not enough to just observe facts and derive morality from those facts, and that because the lifetime is not enough, you need the wisdom of the past that gets to you through stories to and brings to you morality in a way that has been selected and evolved kind of in a Darwinian way, and use it even though you can't understand it completely. So, well, that's the way I understand it.
Can I just a very, very quick point about Jordan Peterson. I've never seen a Christian who is so, you know, on top in knowledge of how Darwinian systems work. Like, no, seriously, it's his understanding of Darwinian evolution is so profound. It's almost baffling. Like, it's like the only people who understand Darwinism as much as he did, all of them are atheists.
But
it's kind of fun.
I just want to point out, though, that I just think it's kind of sad that he would limit this reasoning only to religious texts, because there's a lot, there's a lot of wisdom and that you can get from the past in about everything, like just history. Just look at history books, and it doesn't have to be only religious texts, because
religious texts are very new. Like, it's only a few hundred years old.
Yes.
So, and religion is far older. Christianity is far older than the printed version of the Bible. So I don't know if he makes such an emphasis of, like, the text is just the culmination. It's the apex of the Christian faith, but that's not the beginning and the end of it.
Yeah. Also, there's one thing I was thinking about, which is that even if you use all the stories as a way of deriving a moral framework, you're still using reason to choose between those texts. Because if you, let's say you read the Bible or whatever other text you're using, you're going to dismiss some parts of it, and you're going to use some parts to create your moral framework. And like, we all know that some parts of the Bible are absolutely awful, like massacres, murders, whatever, you name it. And we are dismissing those parts because we deem them not useful to create a positive moral framework, and he does it as well. And my point here is just that he is still using reason to sort out which part of those texts he want to use in order to create a moral framework. So you see my point?
I see what you're saying, yeah. But you still run the risk then of, if we are just going to derive, if we're going to essentially use religious texts, religious stories, as essentially a throw it at the wall and see what sticks method, why do we need to use religious texts?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I think that the point is, this is what has happened. Mm. Like, the question is not as much of like what should happen from there. That's kind of like a separate question. This is a really interesting way to approach it. This is something I would recommend anyone who's interested in the topic. Matt Ridley, who's a biologist, and Bright Weinstein, also an evolutionary biologist, have talked about the evolution of religion. That is to say, religion evolves along Darwinian lines, just like the way, in the way that, you know, memes, as described by Dawkins, evolve along Darwinian lines. So it's much more the point. The major point of Peterson is probably to say, look, as Pierre said, pointed out, you need a lifetime of introspection to come up with a well thought out functioning moral system.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a much simpler way to approach it, which is, we're going to give you a prepackaged moral system.
Yeah.
And this is what mankind has done with, you know, many different religious systems. And there has been kind of a, you know, evolution and selection that's happened. And it's it kind of a co-evolution. Like, I all three of us are atheists. All three of us can appreciate the ways in which religion acts as a parasite. But it, because it's a parasite, doesn't mean that it doesn't play a role. There are many parasites in nature that, you know, co-evolve with their hosts. So it provides something. Religion cannot have survived for hundreds and dozens of thousands of years without providing something to their followers. And that's kind of like the greater point that's, mm-hmm. that's behind it, I would say, which probably is not like that up until the point of the Enlightenment. I can make that observation. I don't think that it'd be very, you know, like controversial to say that, that it has provided something as opposed to the alternative. The evidence being there is no atheist society before, you know, the Enlightenment.
Mm. Well, I was actually going to bring up the Enlightenment there. You know, your argument works completely soundly up until the point of then the Enlightenment, which it kind of at that point then goes, well, at that point, we had to kind of drag the church kicking and screaming into mm-hmm. modernity, you know? And
there's an interesting dynamic there, because most of the large figures of the Enlightenment were still religious. They were not, there were atheists, like, you know, Thomas Paine, you name it.
Mm.
But they were not, by and large, they were not atheists. So there was an interesting dynamic where you can still see. And this is something that, you know, religious conservatives point out. There's still an undercurrent of kind of like traditional, you know, like the so-called Judeo-Christian values behind the Enlightenment.
I have a big problem with that.
It is.
With that there phraseology, is, but okay.
I'm putting quotes, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So you do have kind of like that undercurrent that's at the back. But they did drag the church kicking and screaming. So there is an interesting dynamic there. Mm. Of like, you know, it was not a reform. Out of the Enlightenment, we didn't get atheism straight away.
Mm.
It's like atheism in, you know, the secular societies we live in, this is a really, really recent phenomenon. People stopped going to church in the second half of the 20th century. So it's an interesting dynamic because, as you say, they did drag the church, you know, kicking and screaming in that process of reformation. But that, yeah.
One of the points of Sam Harris that I really found interesting was that, in a way, religion is sort of the childhood of humanity. It's as a prepackage of moral systems, as you just said, to like, okay, here is the sort of moral you should live by. It's brought to you by religion, just live like that, and this is going to be a functional society. And Harry's point was that it's up to us now to grow up out of this childhood, of this religion, and use reason to build a moral system that's not based on things that are not true.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually agree with that sentiment. My main point of disagreement is that we don't seem to have been able to really do that.
I agree with you. 100%. But
on no, I disagree with you on that. I'm going to mm-hmm. push back. No, we have. Tell me, you know, I can take most laws on the books and give a good moral argument as to why they are there. You know, don't kill people. Sure, the Bible said thou shalt not kill first. But I can make a perfectly good moral argument why you shouldn't kill people.
You can, but what kind of a protection does it give you to be, if you're a secular humanist, you know, something that really bugs me, and this is, I'm not going to claim that I have an answer to that question, but to me, the kind of reason, you know, the kind of question that needs to be raised is, how is it that secular humanists have such a proclivity for falling, not all of them, and you know, like a minority, but a significant minority, would fall for system of beliefs that are so recklessly dangerous as, you know, like communism is a perfect example where, you know, I don't know any communist who is not a secular humanist atheist. And it seems to be that you can be a secular humanist and not have much of a moral built-in safety, that safety fuse that tells you this is wrong, stop right there. You're going down a really dangerous moral path. And, you know, murderous ideologies don't seem to really cause to trigger much of a response in people, you know, like people's moral systems in that sense. I'm not accusing communism to be I know people do like accuse communism and atheism. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it doesn't seem to have enough of a built-in defense mechanism against really bad ideologies.
Well, you've had like,
for and example, that in nihilism and
communist,
you know.
You have communist Christians as well, though. You know, I blame communism on communism. You know, I blame the horrors of communism on communism. And you can find communists wherever you go. You can find them the you know, super secular atheist communists, and then you can find the Jonestown massacre people who were a crazy Christian cult who were also socialists,
so
communists or whatever you want to call them.
No, yeah, so like,
so you know, which led to the biggest, you know, mass suicide in history. So
religion, so and like, to be clear, I'm not a religious apologist because I'm not a Christian. Like, I'm an atheist. That's not the question. The question is really, again, like coming back to the idea, like the way I view religion is, as I said, that kind of parasite that's co-evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it feeds itself off humanity in the sense of, like, you know, for hundreds of years, we were all paying our tax to the church. Now we have to do it on a voluntary basis because we've separated church and state.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's so it was kind of like a social organism that had a way to feed itself and grow. But it could not do it without providing something in return. And that's what I mean. It's like you can say, oh, I have this parasite that's on me and it's leeching blood off of me. And the question is, wait a minute, if it's evolved, co-evolved with your species for hundreds and thousands of years, do we know what's going to happen when you remove it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we look at secular countries and there are a few question marks to start being raised. The widespread, you know, we can talk about what's happening in Europe. I think that the main thing that's happening in Europe is that Europe doesn't believe in itself anymore. And, like, you know, there is an undercurrent of just straight up nihilism in Western countries.
So,
and I'm like, well, is there any link to the fact that once we remove that prepackaged moral value system, people go for nihilism and consumerism? That's the question. I don't know if I have an answer to that question.
So can I hop in there really quickly?
That's my question.
Yeah, can I hop in there really quickly? I agree with your diagnosis of the current situation in Europe, where it's kind of like, yeah, we don't know what really Europe stands for anymore. Some people say it's the European Union, but, like, what the hell does that even mean? You know, it's like, oh, we're for, you know, agricultural subsidies. It's
we
like
see
bullshit like that.
No, but
in terms of moral, yeah.
Norway is not in the EU and it has the same issues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's this idea of Europeanness, and that's kind of all we have, which isn't really much to fall back on. Because, and again, that's a falling back on an identity, which I guess we all agree the idea of falling back on identity, immutable identities, is bad anyway. But yeah, so in terms of, like, you know, our morality and our ideals and our foundations as a kind of civilization, what do we fall back on in that case? And I think we do have stuff to fall back on. I think it's there. It's just not being taught. You know, back when the church did, you know, have reins over education and all this kind of stuff, they did impart that morality onto, the population. And now, since they've taken that step back, forcefully, thankfully, we forced them back. But we as a society ourselves are like, what do we put here instead? We have a framework of human rights, respect for individuals, all that kind of stuff. We just haven't imparted it onto the society in the same way that the church did, in such a holistic manner.
A slight disagreement with you there, in just on the kind of, like, you know, liberal humanist values. That's kind of what I was trying to get to earlier. That's actually very, I would say, very weak. It's like, you know, what can you say is the kind of like liberal humanist consensus? It's extremely broad and it's not anywhere nearly enough. Like the I was referring communism to just to point out that such a vile ideology is not incompatible with secular humanism by the fact that so many secular humanists consider themselves to be socialists or communists with complete disregard for human value, with complete disregard for human rights. And that doesn't seem to be, it's not something...
I'm sorry, I can't agree with you. You can't call yourself a secular humanist when you start throwing people in gulags.
Well, apparently you can, and they do in droves. Like, this is, I'm just making an observation about
that might
today.
That might be a no true Scotsman fallacy, but I'm pretty sure as part of human rights law, throwing people in gulags is pretty against the human rights law.
I would agree with you. My sense of liberal secular humanist values include a lot of things that communism is in total opposition to. But apparently the secular humanists are not willing to stand up and say, no, that's not us. Go away.
But that's what I think maybe these people who are willing to throw people in gulags, or these, you know, take the extreme of the right as well, Nazis, okay, or whatever, you know, who don't believe in these values. Like at least Nazis are happy to say, no, we don't believe in these values. You know, that's the only difference. It's just the people on the far left say they do believe in these values, but they actually don't. I'm, you know, that's what I'm making the assumption is, because, like, you know, again, you can't say this and say you follow this to the letter and then throw people in gulags or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think it's that easy to try to blame on either religion or atheism when there's a war or a society that goes completely wrong. My point here is that over the past century, there has been so many things changing so drastically in humanity that religion is not actually that big of a point that has changed. We understand so much of the world. There's been so many changes in the way we live together and like how much we're connected to each other, how many live with each other in such small places that are cities that are so crowded and like everything. And when I hear people saying, oh, communism is about, it happened because of the lack of belief, I'm just like, maybe that's one part of it, but I'm not sure you can really explain everything.
That's not my claim. That's not my claim at all. And just
I was not pretending your claim. I was just, you know, going further.
Yeah. I think we were just saying, you know, without moral basis, people go to crazy extremes of the political right and the political left because, you know, like you were saying, they have no grounding in any kind of foundational morality.
Okay. So to avoid going in circle, let me see. Tell me if you agree with this and see if we can find some common ground that, you know, I think that the three of us agree to say that liberal, you know, humanist secularism is the way to go.
It's the bomb. Yeah,
it is. And you know, if there is something negative to say about it, is that it's not strong enough in terms of like, maybe it hasn't been it hasn't been fleshed out enough, and it hasn't found a way to be packaged that's just easy and snappy and easy to decode in an unambiguous way.
Yes, because it's hard doesn't mean we should not try it.
Right, and this is where I agree with Sam Harris, that in the most technical sense of the term, we can break things apart in factual questions. Mm. That's just extremely difficult to do, and that's reinventing, in a sense, because that's the difficulty you see with religion is something that has evolved over dozens of thousands of years. So as imperfect as it is, you know, when you think in evolutionary terms, something that survives that long has a complexity that's built in. And it's when you mix eggs and flowers, it's really hard to be like, can you separate the eggs from the flour? So there has to be some positives built in, but to distinguish, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff is a hard task.
I agree. It's in terms of religion, it's really well designed, and it, in terms of like, it can market itself incredibly well, but it's still a terrible machine. So it's like a MacBook, essentially. There we go. That'll start an argument in the comments.
I have to come on the side of the MacBook.
It's because you got one for free from work.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah, okay, I think we kind of have run a little bit in circles with this. And maybe we'll close it out because it's don't want to, you know, frustrate our audience
too much. Quite a few things already.
But that is not the only thing they talked about. Of course, Peterson did mention the latest marine animal that we should not base our civilization off of. In the infamous Kathy Newman interview, he said we should not base our society off of the lobsters. Kathy, I believe, agreed.
As she is the bottom lobster and would be swept under the rug in the lobster society.
He has said that we should also not base our society off of sponges. Which is fantastic. I think he's coming to a point where he might be getting closer to the answer of what we should base our society off of. It's obviously some kind of marine biology animal. So, you know, if Jordan, I think you need to pick up maybe a marine biology textbook and have a good read through to find out what we should base our society off of there.
Orcas. Orcas are magnificent creatures. Orcas.
Dolphins, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
I have to go for orcas just for a silly linguistic question. Is that the word for orca in French is this? It's orc.
Okay.
Which confused the hell out of me when I started to read Tolkien, because like, orcs? What?
I have some other notes here, to be honest, where they brought up Nietzsche and Solzhenitsyn, I think I'm saying that right. Which, both of those.
Solzhenitsyn.
Who has actually ever read these people?
I haven't.
I have it on my shelf, but I haven't started it.
That is probably what 90% of people have done. Okay, I know some people who have read Nietzsche, but they're all like really edgy teenagers, and that just puts me off even more, to be honest.
That's not a great set. Yeah, a good setting argument for sure.
They brought up as well another thing, the Irish blasphemy law, which did they commit blasphemy on stage?
They probably have, because they were discussing religion.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, if you offend a certain amount of people,
that's just the definition
by
of so
just
broad
talking about religion.
So technically, I mean, in the most technical sense of the term, Jordan Peterson, by his presence, already offended a large number of people. That's blasphemy in itself.
Yeah. All I wanted after that point was a big, culty country guard to come out on stage and arrest all three of them. That would have been hilarious.
Okay, enough fantasies already. Okay, you had them like taking their jacket off because it was so hot. So don't start putting handcuffs.
Thank
on
God
them.
For there not being air conditioning in Ireland. Woo, woo, woo. No, actually, no. They're just no. Ugh, they're all like no. I thought something I wanted to mention as well. They talked briefly about political polarization and the right and the left. And Murray brought up something interesting. He believes that the reason, like everyone can agree that Nazis are bad, because everyone's taught in history Nazis are bad, and it's the only thing apparently that we teach in history anymore.
That's the only thing that people remember from history class.
Well, yeah. Most people don't even do history, I don't think, in general. I did history in school, but like, if I hadn't done history,
yeah,
unless you're a big history nerd like I was, I could totally imagine just turning on the History Channel. Like, basically all you have is the History Channel, which just plays 24-hour Nazi documentaries, and the Discovery Channel, which plays 24-hour shark documentaries. So like, basically that's the only thing people know.
Now I'm picturing a shark in an SS uniform, and I did not need that in my head.
But basically everyone agree Nazis are bad, and it's really easy to identify a Nazi. Once people start going, you know,
Racial superiority
of white people, it's like, oh right, Nazi, okay, yeah, fuck off.
Yes.
Get the fuck out. And everyone can identify Nazi really well, so everyone has made the assumption that if you are in any way kind of disagreeing with me, the immediate you know, and in any way kind of right wing, and because we see so much polarization, there's very few people left in the middle. So very left wing or very right wing.
Well, all three of us.
All three of us here. that you kind of see then anything being right of, you know, whatever.
Anything right of Bernie Sanders,
yeah,
is Nazism.
Is Nazism. It could also have to do with the kind of idea, if you're at the North Pole, everything is south of you.
Yes.
You know, everything is far south of you. And so, you know, that could be the reason why these kind of ridiculous ideas of, like, anyone who voted for Trump, let's say, is a Nazi and a racist. These kind of outrageous statements calling, like, let's say, half of America Nazis, you know, where that's kind of come from, which I thought was an interesting kind of idea.
Well, to be fair, like, this is happening on the right as well. Is that anyone who says, you know, maybe people should not be left to die in the street because they don't have access to healthcare is a socialist.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of a, you know, it belittles the actual issue and the horrors of socialism and communism. And it doesn't really, it's not an accurate description of someone who just says, I like capitalism, but maybe we should give healthcare to the poor. You know, it's a bit of a stretch.
It's same, and it happens with, on the other direction as well, from socialism, yeah. It happens out to libertarians as well. If I go to a libertarian conference, which we've gone to, and I say something, you know, like, oh, not all regulations are bad and will turn us into Venezuela, I will get some pushback, a lot of pushback from that, even though saying something as, you know,
Aaron,
saying, not all regulations are bad.
Aaron, let's be honest here. Libertarians are completely irrelevant.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying,
they
are one of the political extremes. So,
yes. Oh, yes.
You know, when you go up to them and say something completely reasonable, yeah, when you go up to them and say something completely reasonable, like, people using public roads should show that they can safely operate a vehicle, they end up going and
you're
popping
a
gasket. Yeah, they end up calling you status cook. So, you know, I liked how they kind of touched on the political kind of cornerstone of how, you know, we kind of need to, you know, listen to other people's views and not call everyone Nazis and cooks and statists.
But it is funny to me because
socialists.
I don't know for you guys, but I grew up reading story, you know, like Laura Ingalls, there is a one, you know, yet another version of The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Like, that story comes up in many different forms. I cannot believe that half of the political spectrum doesn't know the story of The Boy Who Cried Wolf. And what I mean, actually, the entirety of the political spectrum at this stage. And it kind of surprises me to be like, you know, if you say that everyone right of Bernie Sanders is Nazism, you're just making it, you're just saying, oh, well, then being Nazi is normal because half the population is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a weird thing to happen for people to want to render that word meaningless. It's becoming up until 5 years ago, if someone was accused of being a Nazi, I would take that accusation. We're kind of like, oh, wait, like, that accusation doesn't come out of nowhere. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
Now it's just smoke. And, you know, it's surprising to me that no one is thinking this through. It's just about like getting the you know, the short-term adrenaline burst of getting all those likes and retweets on social media because you're such a courageous person for calling out the Nazi. But down the line, you're just belittling the meaning of the word. And that, to me, how can I be the only guy in the room? I'm not the only guy, but, you know, figuratively, how is it that so few recognize what's happening? That one, to me, I don't square it in my head. How that's not more obvious.
So I think then it comes back to another topic which really has a lot of influence on the political spectrum, which is the way social media evolved, where you have to act a certain way. If you have, like,
you're expected to act in a certain way when
yes.
there's an accusation. Or when something happens, like, oh, you know, offend the trons, assemble, there's a Nazi over there. And I think that's what kind of, yeah, that's a good, it's a description. It's good. I think it's a good description of what's happening. Like, there is an expectation of behavior on your behalf.
There's you virtue signaling by doing so, and there's also you taking a risk if you do not call out on that person for, like, quote unquote, being a Nazi, being considered as an apologist because of not taking part in this.
And that's the thing as well, is like, if you jump to someone's defense and say, no, that person is not a racial, you know, what's the term? A racial supremacist. He's not again. He's like, in certain cases, Jews now, such as Ben Shapiro, who's an Orthodox Jew, has lost family to the Holocaust, is being called a white supremacist. It's kind of funny, but this is, it kind of reckons back as well to this, how surprising it is that such a conference would work.
Yes.
Like, in the age of social media, you can fit an arena with like three guys not insulting each other, even though they are of like different, you know, political leaning, and kind of like getting to the bottom of things. No one called anyone else a Nazi.
Yes. People were very silent and really careful, and they were really listening to what was happening, even though you could still see some people not being used to listen for such an amount of time. Just thinking about people scrolling down Instagram during the conference, being so infuriating for me.
I seen that. That was a person in front of us. But in fairness, I think she was dragged to that event by her boyfriend. So, you know, fair enough.
Still, that's a lot of people listening to three people talking for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, about complex topic and like, yeah, difficult issues. Mm. Like, I had a headache walking out. So, you know, if you want to really follow the conversation.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's why you didn't want to go for pints after, you big wuss. Oh, my God.
I had only 5 hours of sleep last night. I was still recovering from...
I've had 3 hours of sleep and I'm here drinking with you, for Christ's sake. I literally stopped work at 7 a.m. this morning. Slept for 3 hours.
Wait,
now I'm here drinking with you.
Wait, is that you trying to, like...
One up you, yes.
on the oppression Olympics? Is this an oppression Olympic?
No, it's the man up Olympics. Man up.
Okay, fair enough. I prefer that Olympics.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And I built a fucking cabinet today as well. Well, half a cabinet. Basically, I'm totally masculine. That's what I'm saying. Hashtag alpha male. Not a cook today.
But did you lift, bro?
But I did not lift. Mm-hmm. Well, I lifted a cabinet.
But did you clean your room?
Fair enough.
Half a cabinet.
Can we just very quickly end on that note? Because I know Peterson is a very controversial figure, but I think that there is the meme of the clean your room.
Mm-hmm.
To me, is, I don't know about you guys, but I think it's brilliant.
It is.
And its simplicity, and at the same time, in its depth. And I hope this is a meme that's going to really take off and like incite people to, you know, clean your room before embarking on a journey to change the world.
Mm. And also, as well, the idea that before you try to change people as well, maybe you can try to improve yourself. And just by trying to be a better person, inspire other people to do the same without pushing them to do so.
Yeah, I have a few issues with some of Peterson's rules,
mm-hmm.
To be honest. I don't like some of them. I like other ones. But the one that you mentioned, clean your room, totally for that one. Yeah. Get your shit in order. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm happy to leave it on that. Good talk,
yeah,
guys.
Good
talk.
Thank you for listening to The Classical Drops. As usual, don't forget to subscribe to us. We're available on iTunes, and you can also follow us on social media.